Hello everybody, I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
I'm Jack.
And I'm known as Jack.
No, you are. No, that's not what you're known as, mate.
Right, okay. I'm confused. Yeah.
You're known as idiot baby giant man.
Love it.
Cunt.
Yeah. Nice, that's good.
Birch.
Cheers.
United Artists.
Yeah, what are we watching tonight then?
Craig, what are we watching tonight?
Tonight we are watching what I would regard, personally, and I think you're along with me on this one, Christopher, as one of the greats of the canon of British horror films.
Oh, yes.
The utterly magnificent Theatre of Blood.
Yeah, it is a superlative film. Have you ever seen Theatre of Blood, Jack?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Cock. Speak up, Jack.
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
Why would
you wouldn't
thought
have thought so?
So?
No.
Do you need to refer to your files or something?
I might have seen it.
It used to be on telly quite a lot.
Yeah. There we are then.
It wasn't telly quite a lot. I stand by my answer,
thank you very much.
Yeah.
On the off chance that somebody's actually watching along with us, we're currently sitting paused on the United Artists
just
titles.
Just as the sort of spunky trouser bit starts to flare.
So we'll just press play now.
Okay.
Gorgeous
feet.
Sam Joff. There you go, that's where we are.
Is he? So. It's one of the interesting things about this is something doesn't happen anymore, which is all of the credits and the titles.
Yeah.
You know, with films used to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Then when they finished, they just finished.
Yeah.
Instead of like if you're watching a film now, especially if you're streaming it or something, and you look and you go, oh, there's like 20 minutes still to go. And you forget the 12 minutes and that's the fucking credits.
Yes.
You did.
Every other person in Seoul.
You got so fed up with intertitle scenes that you just left during Deadpool 2 and I had to tell you what happened.
That's right.
I think you might have gone for a tab.
Yeah. So,
hello! That's an older fellow of the old school there.
So this is really nice. It opens up with these scenes from Shakespearean black and white plays, one of whom... Eventually one of them is like a recreation of one with Vincent Price's Edward Lionheart. And an extraordinary lineup of stars.
It's got Jack Hawkins, I see there, Robert Morley.
It does.
Excellent.
Jack Hawkins' voice in
Milo
it.
Milo Shea.
I think this, excellent. my pal Milo Shea, I think this is just on the right side of Jack Hawkins' voice.
So he still have his own voice at
I
this
think
stage,
so.
Yeah.
When is this?
You know about this, Jack.
No, what's the thing with Jack Hawkins'
voice? He had very bad throat cancer.
Did he?
Yeah, sure, he had a thorax.
Tracheotomy,
is
that what it
lance
is?
Removed his lance.
Okay.
And thereafter, his voice was dubbed by Charles Grey.
On one occasion
by Peter Sellers.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Okay.
And on one occasion by Thora Hird. That wasn't secret.
On one occasion by Frankie Howard.
Yes, that's it.
The cinematographer in this film is Wolfgang Sierzycki.
Yes,
extraordinary man who I think we've talked about before. I bought you his book
gorgeous
for Christmas a couple of years ago. A great photographer as well. My good lady wife met him once when he was about 110 or 12 or something, when he died.
Wow.
Another one of those long living cinematographers.
Yeah, it's funny
that,
isn't it?
And he was an extraordinary man because I remember the great Matthew Sweet saying once that he was told by Wolfgang Sierzycki that his earliest memory, I think, was his parents in Germany celebrating the Bolshevik Revolution.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
That's quite a thing.
And his son Peter Sierzycki, he's now in his 70s, is also a very good cinematographer. He shot The Empire Strikes Back, which I think, as anyone knows, is the best looking.
So there's 72,
even though it's the most important.
And the Michael Horder's Financial Times there.
Yeah.
So I think he still had his larynx at this point. When was Waterloo?
Michael Horden lost his larynx.
When was Waterloo? About 71. All right, because he didn't have it. I think he just about had it because he's that croaky way. You know,
yeah.
Right? You weren't fighting from the French.
He sounds like one of those guys from Jude the Fat.
Hello there, man. How are you doing? Now, is that Hilda Braid? No, can't it be?
Oh,
is that Hilda Braid?
I can't remember who it is that plays his wife in it. Michael Horden, it's interesting that the film begins
Hilda Braid?
Yeah.
From, Wolfie. Sit down, have a cup
of tea. I think
it
might be, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
There's an exceptional episode I showed you of The View from Daniel Pike.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The never-seen Scottish BBC Scotland detective...
Yeah,
was Roy Deming.
That's great.
Which is great.
Most belligerent man imaginable.
Yes,
and There's one episode set in the Highlands, and for some reason, Hilda Braid plays a Highland pensioner.
Wow, how odd.
So, do you know the setup?
No, I don't. I don't know anything about this film.
Well, the film actually begins with almost a sort of cold opening, and it's quite clear he is a critic of some sort,
right?
And he's just been called to a meeting, and he sets off, and we know nothing more at this
stage.
Other than the fact that this is one of many locations, which has a great view of the bridge, and we'll talk about that later.
Yes. Okay. I think it's very interesting. Now, this is a good example of changing values, because these people are critics now. Okay, they are successful critics. Mm-hmm. They obviously write for newspapers, but also do all sorts of other work.
Uh-huh.
But the idea that now anybody on that job could have a house there
is
utterly impossible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to be a hedge fund manager slash crook, same thing, to have a house like that. So he turns up in his roller.
Beautiful. How's he going to get that out there? I'll never know. You're starting to see it's quite grim and grubby looking already, which I like.
Did you say 1972?
Yes, it was Britain in 1972.
Yeah, 73.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should just let this scene play out and talk about it as we're going, because I want to talk about the director, because he's quite interesting.
That's a nice shot there.
This is
the
beautiful
broken glass of the window.
And when it comes to the sort of crescendo of this sequence, it is stunning.
It's stunning, and it's genuinely... Wow. Takes you aback by how nasty it is. That's what I think is quite.
When I first saw this, obviously television, sometime in the late 80s, stumbled across it, and I missed the title, so I just turned on and it was this, and I was kind of more used to Michael Hordern in a toga, you know, being silly, and then this happened. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So this is all. You're a bunch of tramps. This property belongs to him. He's get them out. Get out. I'll show them. I'll tell them what to do. Beat it. And he's doing a lot of that, Michael Hordern.
Wow. Oh. Yeah. Splendid actor.
It also tells you something about the times. In that Britain in 1972, anybody watching this, with the exception of half a dozen people in the House of Lords, you're automatically put on the side. You're automatically set against somebody because they're a landlord.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the post-Rackman period. Isn't
it? Absolutely. You must necessarily be a prick.
Oh, that's really grim.
I know.
All
sorts of mucky business.
Having not seen this film, right? But having seen the cover, I just thought.
Shut up, Jack! I want you to stop.
Yeah, I'm happy with this. Constable. Yep. They're not doing anything up.
Coppers. Lots of nice big, very wide angle lenses.
Lots of backlighting.
Jesus.
Lots of shadow. Michael Hordern fucking going for it.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
Really going for
God
it.
God almighty.
Look at the way the camera's moving around behind, as if it's one of the attackers.
Do you know what I think is impressive about this? The way it's just a single shot until it cuts to another shot.
Oh, here we go. This is extraordinary.
Yeah. He's going to fall. Oh no, he's not going to fall. Right, okay. Wow.
Oh.
See, I would have expected a Vincent Price film called Theatre of Blood would be quite gothic and a bit camp. And this is.
It does that as
not
well,
very camp.
It's extremely camp.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Wow.
Oh,
he's trying to get away.
Plus, it's Michael Hordern.
Yeah, he's brilliant, Michael Hordern.
If you're watching it in 1973,
this doesn't happen to me.
Yeah,
Hordern
no.
It
Here he goes, totter, totter, totter.
He's going up to
look who the copper is.
Yeah.
Ah.
Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of her.
I think you mean thou bleeding
but
piece of her.
But I am making gentle with these butchers.
That's pretty good.
Yes. The great Vincent Price.
Here comes a great shot. Look at this.
That is a lovely shot.
And he just, because he just gets to see who it is for a second.
Right, okay. But you're dead.
No.
Wow. That's a good setup, isn't it?
Another critical miscalculation on your part.
It would be tempting just to do it all in shit. This is pointless, isn't it?
You are dead. You who are dead.
Wow.
Yeah, she's at the subjunctive. Here we go.
Now, what does this suggest to you? Anything? The language? Jack?
In respect, what do you mean?
In respect of the fucking plot and what's just happened?
Well, I presume the Vince Price is an actor who's had a bad, and that Michael Horton's given him bad reviews, is my assumption.
And the language?
Well, that was Shakespearean language.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, it's Julius Caesar, schmuck.
Yeah, yeah, no, I get that.
So Brutus is just, Caesar's just
so the markers will be done in...
Are they going to be in Shakespearean style? Yes?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you got it.
Yeah, I got it.
So apparently this was his favourite film because he got to do Shakespeare in it. Right. And actually, you watch it and one of the things you get to the end of it, you feel a real treat. And you do think, my God, it would have been good to have seen him.
Yes, absolutely. And he's raging.
Now, Chris, I think you should fill in to the good people at home.
That guy with the tash.
His weird...
his sidekick.
Sidekick, yeah. So I think you should fill in to the good people at home, the millions of them, why we felt particularly keen to watch this film tonight and to talk about this.
Because on Sunday last compared to, I suppose, the date we are recording this now, we were at an event at the Glasgow Film Festival.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
A talk given by Victoria Price, the daughter of Vincent Price, from his second marriage.
Yes, quite charming.
Quite charming. Stunningly, actually, what you realise that she's in her 70s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because she looks about 50.
Uh-huh. Yeah, great looking woman.
And she talked about her father's character and living with him. And then there was a screening of The Abominable Dr. Fibes. Mm. There's the critic circle, there they all are. Ah, you meet them all as it goes.
So he's going to kill all of them.
And we'll come back to the event as we go through this. Mm-hmm. So
this has to be spoken about, this location.
Tell us about the location, Craig.
The location here, this wonderful sort of penthouse flat, which is actually at the top of a block of, like a sort of commercial block.
Do you recognise it at all, Jack?
What, the location?
Yep.
No, I don't know. Yeah. Should I?
In many photographs of a man at the top of his game in 1980s London.
And it has featured in a lot of telly and things.
Has it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a man for whom not a penny more, not a penny less. You could say as a novelist he was first of Jeffrey Archer's house.
Is it?
It later became Jeffrey Archer's house.
No way.
Yes.
Wow.
But it wasn't originally. He bought it off another name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Who's that then? Off.
Stanley Baker.
Oh, right. I didn't know that.
Now,
At this point, it was probably Stanley Baker's film.
Right.
Have you talked on the podcast about why you are friends with Milo O'Shea? Have we covered this?
Almost certainly. I
can't remember because you mentioned it earlier on, but
a while back. Ooh.
Hello.
Oh, there's Madeline Smith.
Yeah. So it is. Yeah.
Well, we should point out some names there.
Yeah.
So the only clip at the Vince Price effect was from Theatre of Blood because Coral Brown is in it in the hat.
Uh huh.
Who was his last wife?
Ah, okay.
His daughter said she was both a curse and a gift to the family. Wow. She was very funny. Uh-huh.
She said that Coral Brown was either wonderful or terrible and seemed to have somehow managed to estrange him from
his older son.
Yeah.
But she said he loved her, she loved him.
Yeah, it made him happy, so that was
fine. He was very happy. And she said most of the time, she was a wonderful stepmother, but she referred to herself as the wicked
stepmother. She referred to herself as the wicked stepmother.
Did she?
So there's Milo.
And Ian Hendry, who we've covered before.
Yeah, we have talked before about Ian Hendry. Why have we talked before about Ian Hendry?
He was in Tales from the Crypt.
Of course.
We talked about Red Flu.
The Red Flu.
And his terrible last appearance.
The none more 70s illness is Red Flu.
And his terrible last appearance on Patrick McNee's
oh God, that's right. This is your life.
Basically, is
But he was by all accounts a pretty dreadful person.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned that last time as well.
Yeah.
So come on and talk to us about Milo.
He does a wee Scottish accent.
Oh, Scottish accent. He'll be watching television.
Yeah.
A
good actor.
So in the early 2000s. There was the film version of the Spike Milligan book, Pacoon.
Yes.
Was made by, well, I'm not quite sure now who did it. Oh, Terry.
Sue Pat.
Terry Evans? I can't remember his name now. Anyway, he was the director, he was there.
Welcome.
Nice guy.
Chocolate Old.
And And so anyway, there was this thing. They were coming to Glasgow for a charity thing. Mm-hmm. And in attendance was to be some of the stars. Richard Attenborough. Elliot Gould.
Wow.
Jane Milligan. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jane Milligan. I'd meet him though if I got the opportunity. Yeah. Jane Milligan and Milo Shea.
Mm-hmm.
So I blagged my way.
By what means? Can you divulge
that
or not?
I think I basically said that I was going to do something for the website, for TV Cream.
Was that back in the days when we...
Back when we mattered, yeah. And I'd like flashed our 12 million page impression number and things like that, haven't they?
Yeah.
And
it was also around, didn't it? Remember?
It was also around the time, and Paul Daniels.
Yeah, and Paul Daniels.
It was also around the time that we managed to. We used to get ripped off quite a lot by certain national radio DJs.
That's right. Yeah, we've spoken about that.
Yes. So we weren't uninfluential.
We were the zeitgeist. Right.
We were the Zygarde.
Yeah. Back in the day.
Well, there's pure Dennis Price. So
there's basically a resemblance in it to J.G. Ballard, doesn't it?
He does a bit, yeah.
He's basically seeping brown ale.
Yeah.
He used to go to the production with a string bag with six bottles of brown ale in it every day.
Oh, bless his wee heart.
Anyway.
Because he was King Hearts and Coronets, wasn't he?
He did, he was.
Very handsome when he was
young. Mm-hmm. Very beautiful.
And Robert Hammer die badly, the director?
Did he?
I think he either died of alcoholism or perhaps like a gay killing or something. He was murdered or something.
A gay killing?
Well, he was murdered in a pickup or something like that. Something quite
gay
nasty.
Killing. He's beaten to death with a bunch of flowers. He's beaten to death.
Queen album. No, you know what I mean. I think it was like a pickup or something that went badly wrong.
So, so I went along to I managed to blag my way into the... It was Guerrilla Films. Huh. As in Guerrilla, the... Mm-hmm. Like guerrilla fighter films, not guerrilla. No.
Yeah.
And it was in a hotel in Glasgow, and hardly anybody famous had turned up because Richard Attenborough was unwell. Elliot Gould just not turned up.
Mm-hmm.
But in attendance was Jane Milligan and Milo Shea.
Mm-hmm.
And I chatted away for a couple of hours with them all.
Why would you not want to?
Because nobody else from the press turned up.
I see, okay. Yeah.
And I started to recount for Milo Shea scenes of films that he'd been in that he'd forgotten.
Wow.
And I acted out almost his entire sequence from Steptoe and Sunrise Again, which he laughed all the way through because he'd completely forgotten that he'd done.
Really? That's quite a nice memory. Yeah.
So then we went to the Do. Uh-huh. There was a charity showing at the Odeon in Renfield Street, as was.
Yep.
And then across the road to sort of like a nightclub along the street, Bamboo, where they had like a reception kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they invited me and my sister was there, and we went to that. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself in this nightclub sitting next to Milo Shea. And I kept on asking them questions like, what was it like being on Frasier and what was it like working on this and that? Uh-huh. I couldn't hear any of the answers because the music was blaring.
Yeah.
It was great. And I have it hanging up in the hall that's... the programme from the Coon with he's written on it to my friend.
Did he not play Janangelo?
Yes, he did. Yes,
in
Barbarella. And he played Spandau Ballet in 1994.
Is the film any good of a Coon?
It's all right.
Yeah.
Right. What happened to it?
Never troubled the
cinema
very much.
No, it came in. It was one of those things that got like a week's general
pass. Right, okay.
But I mean, it kind of... But it was quite good fun because Coon is about the drawing of the border.
Yeah.
And so escapades and scrapes because it goes through this village.
I see.
And one of the border commissioners is the great Jim McDonald.
Oh, yeah. What about you? Strangely, pertinent to the days we're in now, then.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
But there was one little note of sadness in it. Well, two things, actually, with Jane Milligan. They described how... and the director, by the way, the guy Terry, whoever his name is, was a very nice man. He was very good. Nice chat. Bought everybody lots of drinks and things.
Ah.
But had quite a hot sun. But anyway, Jane Milligan said that, the role that Richard Attenborough has through it is a sort of narrator.
Hmm.
And you see him in the sort of voice booth doing the narration and sort of reacting with characters. And that originally was supposed to be Milligan, but he was just too ill to do it.
Why did they have this event in Glasgow?
No, they did a number of them. It was for a children's homes or something.
Was Richard Attenborough as good as he was when he said, Dr. Slan, Dr. Grant, Dr. Slater, welcome
to Jurassic Park. But the worst bit for me, good and worst bit, was I was chatting to Jane Milligan and I said that I'd written stuff about Picoon and things when I was essays at school and all that sort of thing and said out. And I hold on.
Second month.
Dennis Price away.
Yeah.
And we talked. I wore a thornproof jacket.
Wow.
And we talked about. I talked about the various different thematic strands between his novels and his books and whatever the comic, thing. And I talked about different names that were used in Goon shows and how they appeared in different places and all this sort of stuff, textual criticism. Wow. And at the end of it, she said, "Oh God, my dad would have loved to have met you." I was like, "Oh, don't say that." Do we recognise the cemetery?
It's Kensal Green, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is also in. Oh, what is it again?
Well, it's in the climax of Stepdaughter Son Ride Again.
Of course, it is. Yes.
I think we
mentioned this one.
Yeah, we did.
That was wee Mark Miller. Remember Mark? Hey, Mark. You're right out there. Yeah. You never call. You never write.
You never get.
Is it because I made too many jokes? You never drink coffee.
No, he doesn't.
Are you good? Are you bad? I don't know anymore. I don't know, kid. You're a good kid.
Bad kid. Good.
Who is it? Oh, there it is again. See.
Craig,
yeah.
Have you ever, in anger, worn a cravat?
No.
I think I've just worn it.
What was it, Victoria Price referred to?
An ascot.
That's
what Americans call it.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I've never worn a cravat.
No, I don't think I've ever worn a cravat.
I don't like too much around the neck.
No.
I'm an open neck kind of guy. I was an open neck kind of guy.
Were you?
Before wankers in like law firms did it.
Right, I
see. I'm essentially a scruffy man.
Do you think they saw you one day and were like, that's the look for
us? I actually said to my son yesterday, I said, do you like the fact that I don't have to wear a suit for work? He said, aye, that's good. Mm. I don't want to wear a suit for work. Okay. I said, that's a pretty good standard to go through trying to get a job with.
Mm. One thing that was great in the...
This is a great scene, by the way.
It really is. Beautifully made.
And it's also that's what's his name, Napoleon from Stepped on Sun coming up.
What, Hercules?
Hercules, that's his name,
Hercules,
sorry.
Yeah, that's your boy.
Got the name wrong.
Or Hercules the Second.
It's quite nasty as well.
It is, yeah.
When at the Victoria Price's chat, there's a great bit where she talked about his sense of style and how he was always very beautifully dressed, but in real life he was pretty crumpled and shambolic.
Was he? How unusual, yeah.
And he never, ever ironed a shirt.
Yeah.
Which made me feel great, because anybody who's ever been anywhere near me or seen me at work knows... Life is just too short to
iron. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Ben, my son, the other day, they used that as an excuse, having been at the same event with us, to say, well, sorry for Vincent Price. See, I believe that being a fan of the polo shirt or T-shirts or things like that, I can hang them up in a way that means that they don't have to be then. Trouble is, then my wife gets involved and she just fucking crumples them up and throws them down on the ground.
Disgraceful.
Every single time. Yeah, and I think she's just doing it to annoy me.
Although,
so I'm not rising to it.
Although, to be perfectly honest, that still doesn't bother me. I still don't iron them.
But I just kind of feel that it wouldn't matter, but she just seems to do it to annoy me. Coral Brown.
Yes.
She's a source of many great stories in Alan Bennett's diaries. Phoning him up, and he does a very good impression of her, saying, that, darling, do you hear me? And she said she was in a film. She said, I'm in a film called, what was it called? She says, Hold Yourself. The most wonderful woman in the world, and he'd hardly say I'm not playing the lead. But when she died, she was famous for swearing. Barry Humphreys read this poem that he wrote at her funeral. She left behind an emptiness, a gap, a void, a trough. The world is quite a good deal less since Coral Brown fucked off. That's a statue of Melvin Bragg.
Actually, it's a statue of
Diana.
Diana
Rigg.
Diana Rigg plays his daughter.
Rigg, who does bear an uncanny resemblance, I would say, to Alice Lowe. Looks a bit like her there, doesn't she?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so that's her father's grave. So,
oh, is she going to be out to avenge his death? Is that the idea?
Well, he's
still alive.
They clean
a line her.
Well, we don't realise that he's still alive.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
You do get the backstory of what happened.
It's, okay. Yeah. That's fine. Just,
but I mean, you've already had what, 3 murders, 2 murders.
Yeah, because it's not linear by any means. It's not moving backwards and forwards, but in a very, very well handled way.
Right. Should we talk about the director? Because it's interesting. His name's Douglas Hickox. He's got the sort of career that I think actually we rather love. Because he left school at 17 and joined Pineweed Studios as an office boy.
Mm.
And then, of course, would have worked in every department
mm-hmm.
in his way through. By the 50s and 60s, so the time he made this, he was in his early 40s, mm-hmm. so he must have been born, what, 1930 or so. So in the 50s and 60s, he started working as a first AD or a second unit director.
Mm-hmm.
His first film was the film version of Entertaining Mr. Sloan, which Harry Andrews was in. So,
oh, yeah, of course it was.
And Beryl Reid, of course, you just mentioned.
Yeah. Who
plays Sloan in it again?
Is it not a...
Is it Malcolm? It's not Malcolm McDowell.
No, I can't remember.
I can't remember who plays Sloan.
Is it Andy McDowell?
No, it's not Roddy McDowell either.
Certainly not Roddy McDowell.
However, he did have a really good run of films.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1972, he made a film called Sitting Target, which I remember seeing late on telly on STV. And it's Ian McShane and Oliver Reed going a prison break together. And there's a big twist at the end, it's a cracker. And that's always trying to get back because he knows his wife's knocking someone off, so he wants to get back and get it. It's a really good picture, it's a really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a nice, grubby London, South London sort of feel to it.
When he made was this, that
it's fairly familiar.
Okay.
It's really good, it's worth seeing. Then he made this, mm-hmm. which I think is a great London film.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
And I think the sort of locations will come more and more as we talk
but
about
without,
it.
But without being, you know,
touristy London.
But, you know, without being like, it's Carnaby Street.
No, not at all.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It looks like people live there.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because his third film in a row that I think is a cracker, and one which we're going to do in a forthcoming commentary, is Brannigan.
Yes.
Which is John Wayne as a big hard-hitting cop comes to London to sort out some shit.
And then make crisps.
And it's fucking brilliant. It's an absolute... It's a cracking thriller. It's really good. And actually, one of the things you notice from this and Brannigan is he was a really good action director. There's a sequence comes up later in this involving a sword fight.
Oh, yeah, that's a fantastic...
Trampolines. It's incredible.
In this film?
Yeah. Which you see,
so there's Joan Hickson.
Mm-hmm.
As the wife of the guy Arthur Lowe.
His last big film was Zulu Dawn, which I don't think anybody needs to get made, but I'm sure it was pretty well made.
Don't
Zulu Dawn, it's alright.
Bob
Hoskins got a tapeworm making it.
Nice.
Went down to about 3 stone.
Wow, look at John
Hickson. Just basically beard and eyes.
And Arthur Lowe, ladies and gentlemen.
Great, yeah. Arthur Lowe. So great.
Amazing,
this must have been towards the end of his active career because that's when he started to get ill.
Because when did Dad's Army wrap up?
Oh,
but 77, 78?
No idea.
Was it as late as that?
Went on for quite a while.
Oh, right. I don't think it went on as long as that. When he started to get to the late 70s and early 80s, it's when his narcolepsy
kicked in.
And he
particularly wasn't suffering from there.
No.
No.
But Joan Hickson's a funny character because she's always the definition of somebody getting famous late on.
Yeah.
Because she appeared in. Remember seeing her young.
She appeared in hundreds of things. She never played young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, in Heavens Above, the Peter Sellers film, where he plays the vicar.
Oh, yeah.
Who basically runs a food bank that everybody rips the piss out of.
Mm-hmm.
When they go around doors trying to get people to donate, she appears a couple of times as a sort of busy. Suggestively Daily Mail reading housewife who can't talk because she's, you know, I've got the washing machine on. She didn't always play posh characters.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say because I think we tend to see her as Miss Marple now, but actually she played
the scruffy housewife
quite
a lot.
Mm.
And of course, famously, Agatha Christie told her that she would be the perfect Miss Marple.
But she got to a certain age. So
and then nothing happened with it until the 80s. Remember how big those Marple
they were, great,
yeah,
they were,
yeah,
they
but
were
what
really
a big
good,
deal
yeah.
they were.
Yeah, was, yeah.
But were they
bank holidays? They
were they at the same time as Heed the Ball was doing Poirot? Did they come later?
They came first.
Which came first? The
Marple.
Yeah, they were great.
Poirot started on
in the sort of
New Year 1980. 1978.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a kind of post.
It was in the first
Morse kind of thing, isn't it?
Front cover of the TV Times in the New Year, January. First, you know, after the double issue.
Well done.
Yeah. And either 87 or 88, because it's New Year, you get a bit confused.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting watching it and thinking, oh, it's so stylish. The problem is, like, 300 episodes later, you're like, all right, okay, still stylish.
But they were big. And remember when they brought back Marple with Geraldine McEwan playing her?
Yeah, and she was a completely different character.
Mm.
She was very odd.
She was a sort of gossipy, mimsy woman. Although my mum, who's addicted to these sort of things, she sort of defended it, then went off it. But she says that, because then she get taken away and replaced by
Julia McKenzie,
who she said was much better.
Yeah, I thought she was better. But I just think also, she was one of those actors, Geraldine McEwan, who always had a quite odd quality about her.
Yeah, I liked Geraldine McEwan.
Oh, she was great. I mean, she was my first Miss Jean Brodie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Wang.
No. I remember, because STV did it in the 70s.
That's right,
So that was My Girls at the Creme de la Creme.
Of course, she's also in the great series, which is almost completely forgotten now, which you would never get made now, Map and Lucia.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You love that show.
I love Map and Lucia.
I remember you writing about that.
Fantastically studio-made tape.
Didn't they try and bring it back a few years ago and they filmed it?
Yes, and it was no point without... because it was basically Prunella Scales, Geraldine McEwan and Nigel Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't them, it didn't really make much sense. And it really mattered that it was sort of shot on tape.
Yeah.
And although they did a lot of location stuff because they were all outside. But it was a good example of, it was the production that mattered and not the actual story. Because what you enjoyed, I love this, when she goes, she screams and goes,
Heat Zaffer, as Martin would say.
Yeah, Heat Zaffer.
It's a very good heat.
Isn't it?
Yeah. The Map of the Chia novels were written by E.F. Benson, the great ghost story writer as well.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, very good.
What is that in the hall? Oh, it's Ian Hendry.
He was quite a sexy kind of man, wasn't he? I think he's quite a good looking guy.
He's got a very 1972 hairstyle.
Yeah, that's why not.
Some lovely shots in this.
Like,
it's
like
not
that.
73.
Graham's hair.
71. That is 72.
I like his reaction as well. Yeah.
Graham's hair is like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, I love that. See this and then the other things that appear. His reaction's always just,
Wow. Now, on our last commentary, did
have
we
you
not talk
who
about
his deputy is, by the way?
No, who's his deputy?
It's Eric Sykes.
Oh, yes, so it is.
It's Sergeant Bob Cryer.
Yes, it does like Bob Cryer, you're quite right.
See?
Yeah.
Didn't you mention a film and say that you were going to talk about the end of it on this film?
Were we?
Yeah, you did.
Well, you need to give us more than that, could
I can't remember what it was, mate.
When?
I wasn't really listening on the last commentary. You said that well, you weren't going to talk about the end of it until this commentary.
Oh, was it not something we'd seen?
Yeah.
And then we said we'd give them enough time. Oh, was it not Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah.
And we said, we'll give you until next time to watch it.
Come on in.
I can't remember why, though. Yeah. Why did we talk about it?
Well, you said that you weren't going to talk about it about the end until this podcast.
About the sort of counterfactual thing.
What is the counterfactual? Well, you tell me.
Okay, well, for spoilers.
Uh-huh. Spoilers.
But this is the point. We said that we wouldn't spoil it last week. But if you didn't listen to it by now...
Well, fuck you.
Yeah,
okay.
Right,
so
let's go.
Spoil it. So the whole point of the film is that, you know, when it was sold and we were told...
Sorry, if you don't want to know the spoilers, cut to this time code.
okay, go.
So we were told it was going to be a film about the Manson killings and turned out actually not... You've not seen it, have you?
No, I haven't.
It turns out not really to be about the Manson killings because they go to the wrong house. They go to the house next door.
Right, I see.
They go to the house which belongs to...
they being...
The Manson family. They go to the house that is occupied by Leo DiGiannero.
Leo
DiCaprio.
And Bradley. Bradley Pitt.
Bradley Wiggins.
So in that film, Sharon Tate doesn't get...
She doesn't know.
That's right,
which actually becomes quite a moving ending.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it follows 10 of the only 5 of the most violent moments in the film. Because they go to the wrong place, because basically Brad Pitt is a seriously dangerous, very laid back, very funny, very likable character, but there's a sub hint that he's murdered his wife in the past, and he's a very good fighter. So they break in there and they come up against him, and he's just taking some drugs. So he basically smashes open their heads in front
of
you.
So he slaughters the Ransom family.
He slaughters two of them. One of them runs away. The wonderful Maya Hawke, who's Uma Thurman's daughter, that was in Stranger Things 3. She fucks off.
Right.
So three of them go in. He stomps the guy's head in. He smashes the other woman's head basically open.
This is after his dog's eaten most of them.
Eating the guy's balls. And the third one goes out into the pool. She runs out and smashes into the pool when she is set on fire by a flamethrower that's a film prop that Leo DiCaprio has in his garage.
Wow.
So it's very high cost. So it's outrageous. It becomes quite funny and actually quite sort of liberating. Because these dreadful people don't get to do what they want, what we know they did.
But that's
and
why
then
I think
it's a really sweet scene at the end.
Right. That's why I find it. That's why it really messes about with you, because you watch it, and the violence is so outrageous that you laugh. Then you check yourself because it's happening, and apart from anything else, it's a man doing it to these women.
Yeah.
Then you check yourself again because they've come to fucking murder a woman, a pregnant woman.
Yes.
So by the time you come round, if you've any sense, you come round all these emotions, you're like, fuck them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should point out in the film that we're watching at the moment, apart from the beautiful Rover 2000 just driven up, is that it has the rather unlikely scenario of a lascivious Harry Andrews trying to cop off with a young woman.
Yeah. And if he was done by the Me Too movement just now, he would be found...
Guilty! quick few things about Douglas Hickox to wrap him up. He was married, first of all. His first marriage was to Anne V. Coates, who was the editor of Lawrence of Arabia.
Nice.
So I'd say she could have cut it down a bit more.
Yeah,
that would
be good.
There's a wee bit of wriggle room in there.
Yeah. There are a few children, one of whom is Anthony Hickox, who directed Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth.
Oh, yeah. And Wild Bill Hickox.
And Wild Bill Hickox.
The Western Sheriff.
That's him.
Wow.
And when he died, he left quite a substantial bequest to the BFI. Which became the BIFFAs, the British Independent Film Awards.
Oh, okay, there you go.
That's a really nice thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a very nice thing. I was slightly distracted by that that Time Bandits video.
The one signed by Michael Palin.
Is that? Oh, there we are. What does it say on the bottom of PS? I must have fruit. Is that what it says?
Yeah,
I must have fruit.
Yeah, it's a line
from character Time says in Time Bandits.
And did you say to him that he was the one part of the film you didn't think worked?
Chris and I met Mr. Michael Palin within a few months of each other last year. Was it last year? I met him last year.
Was it this year or last year?
I think you had him on this year, but you met him on the same day I did last year, but I had tea with him.
Was he at the hospital, was he? Yeah.
No, that was the first time round.
So level,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That was the first time round, because I'd met him twice.
I just literally said that.
So level with me.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant we met him twice on the same day.
Craig.
The first time was when... I did the
hospital.
He was at the hospital.
Yeah.
And you had seen
that for you, wasn't
that
it?
Was no. The first one was the Holy Grail one.
Right.
Okay.
And then the next time he was back at the hospital with the elderly janitor. And that was the time that I met.
Yeah. It's very nice.
Is he a wanker or a good guy?
He's a lovely
guy.
Oh,
he's great.
I had dinner with him. It was fine.
Is there a bit of stealing him though? That you know, he lets slip every now and again.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you?
Because I had a chat with him. No.
Okay.
But I had a chat with him and we were sitting chatting away and there was a couple of things that I was talking about. And he was a wee bit not with me, but you know, like we were talking about a particular thing and he was a bit uncompromising as an opinion of him.
Was he? Interesting.
He signed two things for me. He signed
your backside?
No, when I both cheeks.
Signed your name. Signed his name across your heart.
When I was 18, I think it was. I went to see him.
This is after your poet laureate.
Yeah.
Post season.
Can you just let me finish one sentence,
please? Yeah, let's do it.
When I was 18, I went to see him at the book signing for Around the World in 80 Days, which was just done in the Waterstones at George Street in Edinburgh. Now, of course, he sells out. You know, the concert hall and things.
Yeah, of course he does. Yeah.
And he signed the book, and it was very nice. Best wishes, all that.
Yeah.
So I took that back along, and he signed it a second time 30 years later.
Lovely.
And said to a considerably older Craig or something like that, you're very much older now.
Yeah.
And another book was actually the first volume of his diaries, which I had this tea with him in Dunoon at an event just beforehand. And actually, weirdly, the first volume of diaries I bought in Dunoon, which is not a place you normally go to buy a book,
it isn't.
But I happened to be in Dunoon when it came out and I bought it. Wow. And so he wrote a nice thing about that in that book as well. So he was lovely, I think. I thought he was really charming.
Good nice. Guy.
Good guy. He was very nice to my son, which is always a nice thing when someone's
that's good.
But I've pointed out, you know, before, especially if you read the diaries, the Hollywood Diary, the Halfway to Hollywood, whatever it's called. You know, for all his, like, you know, bonhomie and being nice and all that sort of thing, which he is, you don't get to make films and be a top box office star and have productions made, companies and things, if you've not got something about it.
Yeah. No,
and if you're not in a position to insist upon things.
Yes. Yeah.
So you don't get all of that just by being a nice guy.
Yes.
You'd have to be a nice guy and have a little bit of something about you as well.
I think at the moment he's not well, is he? He's getting a little operation for something.
Is he?
Oh. A wee heart valve thing or
bless
something.
Oh, bless his wee heart.
He's taking a try to follow him on Facebook. He's taking a few months
ironically,
off.
Harry Andrews is getting a wee heart operation at the moment. Yeah.
He, in the last year, he's written two books as well. He wrote the book Erebus, which in Glasgow is an answer to...
I see that was Ships and Road.
Erebus?
Erebus.
Exactly. So Erebus, which is about the ship and the Franklin expedition, which is fantastic.
Yes,
I read that over Christmas holidays last year.
Nice.
And he's just got coming out, I think, a book of his Korean diaries for the excellent Channel 5 programme that he made in Korea last year, North Korea.
I didn't see that.
It's really, really good. And, of course, people were a bit snotty about it because he's not a foreign correspondent or whatever. He didn't smuggle himself in. And he remained very kind and polite to people and showed you all the things that the state wanted you to see. But he also, in doing the programme, travelled about and met real people and spoke to them.
Well, I mean, it is good, but you can't make a career out of it.
Well, hey.
Hey!
I thought it was very good.
Well, put it this way, nobody else that I've ever seen has let me see that many people from North Korea in a programme. So for that alone, it's a good thing. So here you see this tableau here. It's very...
it's beautiful.
It's Merchant of Venice, isn't it?
I see, okay.
Pound of flesh.
But he's actually cutting it out, unlike in the Merchant of Venice, where whereas, as he says,
Shylock is
some legal loophole, possibly to do with the Court of Session, means that... they don't in the play.
So Michael Penn, a good guy, but not...
Well, come on.
Not
the good guy. He's not the good guy. Good guy is my neighbour, Davy, across the road.
Is it? Okay. What have been the best films that you've seen then since?
I knew you were going to ask what the
best
films. That was the good guy best films of the year, isn't it?
The good guy's best film.
I've got a top three for the year so far.
For the year so far?
Yeah.
Good guys, top three.
Right, which
one? Number three.
Number three of the...
Good guys, top films of the year so far, top three.
Booksmart.
What's that? Booksmart.
Sorry, Tedra, I was saying earlier, there are a few really beautiful overhead shots.
That's a nice shot.
But they've become a feature quite as it develops, especially where there's one absolutely beautiful... If there's one criticism I'd make of the direction, there's a fabulous shot when you get the exposition of what happened when he disappears.
Okay.
And it just doesn't hold quite long enough. Because you just want to see it just
wonder
a bit
something
more.
Happened.
No, you just want to see it just a second
more. Yeah, I wonder if that's all they got or something.
Yeah, possibly,
you know what I mean?
Sorry.
So Booksmart.
Booksmart number three. Olivia Wilde's film about the two girls.
Have
you guys
yet.
Seen it?
No, not yet.
No.
It's fantastic.
Why?
It's funny. It's really warm. It's... of the moment that they're two young women who are really, really funny and really likable and do their own thing. It's just great. It's a lovely, lovely film.
So, but there's two films better, though.
There are two better films, yeah.
So what's the good guys? Best films of the year so far? Number two!
Pedro Almodovar's Hope and
Pedro Almodovar's Hope
and
Glory.
Sorry, I've got the name wrong.
Pedro Almodovar Hoping for...
God, his name, Paving Glory.
What is it? Just
Paving Glory, I think it's called. Obviously, it's a translation from the Spanish.
Right, okay.
Which is his new film that came out recently.
With Adrian, what's his name for that song?
Antonio Banderas.
Okay.
And it's lovely.
What's it about?
Amazingly, it's about an aging Spanish gay director who.
Really?
Whose career's come to a sort of a.
Played by Adrian Mills.
And his mother, as he remembers his mother, his beautiful mother, played by Penelope Cruz. And he's trying to sort of get himself out of the funk that he's in.
It sounds like an amazing film.
It is great.
I can't think there could possibly be a better one than that.
There is one.
Is there?
Yeah.
So what's number one in the good guys, best films of the year so far?
It's very, very boring, I'm afraid, but the number one film for me this year so far, quite a long way, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
See, I'm very bad at coming around with this sort of things because I can never remember what films were out in such a year.
Oh, yeah, but I write them all down and I mark them and I give them...
Do you write them stars in some kind of journal?
Yeah. What kind do you think it is?
Like a drippy tits diary.
Do you see the book that you refer to as a drippy tits book that I've got with me tonight?
That's
a Glasgow made Allwich.
Is it?
Notebook, which is the preferred notebook of Mr. Mike.
Come out, Glasgow made shirt. Lovely.
Why?
What?
That's a nice comfy couch looking at.
That is, yeah. It's quite
low down.
Yeah. So there's your problem. Down, yeah. Lovely.
So
when
this is a flashback to what happened.
Yes, I see.
And
they've
just screwed him over and they're laughing about him.
Mm. Oh, he's come as Peter Capaldi in Doctor Who.
He's come as
John Between, in fact. Yeah, it's very John Between.
Smells like bums.
Yeah, it smells like bums, yes.
I bet I'll them.
See, his character, his acting is supposed to be rather grand and old-fashioned and melodramatic.
Okay.
Yeah. A sort of Donald Wolfe-y kind of thing.
Yeah. So falling out of fashion, perhaps.
Yes. Well, they keep on saying, you know, they're giving the Critics Circle Award to a young actor because you have to do all sorts of different range and he only does Shakespeare. Right. Of course, if you only do Shakespeare now, they get a fucking knighthood.
Mm. So where was...
then you get to be in an X-Men film.
So where was Vincent Price in his career then? That being the case,
at this stage,
because of that, because
he was cast because he was the preeminent horror film star, and at the time would have been a very bankable name for a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
He was just coming off the back of the run that he'd done with Roger Corman, which had been very successful through the 60s.
Mm-hmm. I can't over.
This was his favourite film.
Mm.
Can't overemphasize how much I love The Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is so beautiful.
Yeah.
That it really almost doesn't matter what's in it.
Yeah.
The scene at the end where all the different masks appear is utterly gorgeous. Laughing Nicholas Rogue, of course.
Shot by Nicholas Rogue, absolutely. Mm. And actually, as we said the other day, we met, she brought up a screenshot, or what do you call it, a slide of the poster for the film.
Mm.
And the poster was incredible. As was the one for The Fall of the House of Usher with them going down into the crypt.
Mm.
Really beautiful, proper bit of art.
So what was there a particular anniversary? Why was there that screening then?
She was just out about.
Just likes to do a bit of that.
She's quite an interesting woman. She said that 2 years ago she did her best.
Yeah, she made herself intentionally homeless.
So she travels the world. She's got a dog.
And she's got a wee dog and she travels the world. She stays with people and...
Wow.
Stays with friends and well-wishers and whatever, because she doesn't want to be tied down to material things and the requirements of having...
Oh, bless her.
Yeah.
And so you said she's in her
70s. Basically,
she
punches off everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very hale, though.
But it was quite funny what she said about her dad, though. It was very unlike what you think. She said there's the polyester... He'd like to buy waiter's pants, as she called them. You know, sort of $10 polyester sort of waiter's trousers because they were easy to look after. They must have been honking in the
head. Yeah, yeah.
But also the photographs of me sort of goofing around with the kids is what I'm doing at Disney. Everyone's like laughing. Everyone laughs. Everyone smiles at this. And it's a picture of him in teacups at Disney. Yeah. And he's sort of pulling a face.
And there's little kids that are all sort of like cheering, but he's obviously having the time of his life.
And he had a recreational vehicle. But I mean, some of the stuff that came out about him, being a sort of seen as a fellow traveller, about him having been... he did a lot of work with Native American art and whatnot, going into the reservations and helping people. He was actually a really good guy.
This shot I'm talking about is just here.
Just coming
so
here
is
yeah.
he going to pretend to kill himself? Is that what's going on?
No, he's an
extraordinary stunt.
He does, in the film, he does intend to kill himself.
Oh, I see.
Also shot through the window from their point of view again.
Yeah.
Mm. Athol looks a bit bemused, doesn't he?
He does.
He's acting. There it is. But I just like I'd have liked that to have the curtains open fully.
I see what you mean,
yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah, but like you say, there was something happened and they couldn't reset it because the light's going. You can see.
Yeah you can. Yeah.
Big lens flare.
Yeah.
Not a digital one.
Not a J.J. Abrams painted in one.
Mm.
That's your big 35mm lens catching it there.
There he goes. Wow, that's quite a stunt.
I would suggest that's a person.
Yeah.
And not a model, because a model I'm not sure would fall as well as that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good cut as well.
Now, we're not listening to the sound on this, but I would make mention of this sound. Click, click. of putting a glass down on a glass dining table, which is a very 70s and 80s sound.
Absolutely.
It's not so GE anymore.
Yeah. And also, if it's quite wet, it would actually start to move of its own accord across the surface.
It would.
As if the painting was coming to some direction. Oh, 400 words for the morning.
Right. Who's Dickman?
They've all got funny names like Sprout and Dickman and things like
I see,
that.
Okay.
This is Thingy's heart.
Oh, that, wow. Yeah, that's Harry Andrews' heart. Yeah.
Like you say, his reactions are quite so.
They're always just like, ew.
Oh, come on.
All of the scenes in the, of everybody except, I think it's very interesting thematically, scenes with Lionheart, but these scenes are very bright.
Mm-hmm.
Any scenes with Lionheart are very dark.
That's a good point.
Very enclosed.
Mm-hmm.
I look at that house that.
As if he's contained in his madness.
I think he lived in there. Jeff, yeah, I think it'd be awfully hot in the summer. In a London summer, all that glass.
No, they've not such nice big windows and doors and things.
Yeah, like. That gets hot.
No, but I mean, you can open them, you know.
You just smell London then.
But, I mean, they have air conditioned. You know that.
Well,
like.
That's okay then.
The other thing is the. I haven't got to Jack Hawkins yet. His demise.
You recognise this pastor. Actor, of course.
Which one?
The one that she's taking downstairs now.
Oh, yeah.
He's Tubby in A Matter of Life and Death.
Yes.
Is that he's called his pal that's waiting for him. And he actually hasn't aged very much.
Are you not, is that not Trubshaw?
Trubshaw, that's his name. Flying off to Trubshaw.
Oh, I thought that actually was Trubshaw, though. As in the actual Trubshaw that was David Niven's pal.
Isn't that him?
Oh, I didn't think it was him. Maybe that's a misconception I've always had.
Can I look it up?
You can, as long as it doesn't rattle the.
Yeah.
I'll rattle that. I'll rattle whatever I want to.
Maybe it is the same person, I don't know. I mean, you know, David Niven always got the name Trubshaw into every film.
Uh huh.
Did he?
Yeah, because his best pal was called Trubshaw.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But I was always under the impression that in A Matter of Life and Death, he had managed to get Trubshaw into the film.
Oh, as in his best pal.
But
right,
maybe
okay.
I might just have imagined that.
Okay.
Every film that David Niven's in somewhere
mm-hmm.
is a
yeah,
Trubshaw.
It's
oh, it's lovely.
He plays Bob Trubshaw in A Matter of Life and Death.
So it's just the name then.
Robert Coote.
Right, okay.
For example, in Wuthering Heights with David Niven's in, he managed to get it on a gravestone in the graveyard.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in every film is something to do with Trubshaw.
Very nice.
This was his last performance in film.
It certainly looks well. He drowns in a vat of wine.
He died in his sleep at the North.
In a vat of wine?
No, he died in his sleep at the New York Athletic Club.
Did he indeed? I'll bet he did.
He shared a house with Niven for many years.
Wow. So, how did this film do then?
I think it was quite a success.
Was it?
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
Well, I don't understand the question.
Well, as in, what evidence do you have to support your hypothesis?
How about the evidence of me telling you to go fuck yourself? How's that for evidence?
Well, have you looked up on Wikipedia?
I think it did pretty well.
Right, okay.
Most of these films did a pretty good turn.
Uh huh.
You know, they weren't like fucking Marvel movies, but they made their money back and more.
Well, I mean, in the sense that you make a film at the time of its budget was probably a couple of million.
Uh huh.
You make 10 million back.
Mm.
So right.
Yeah.
It was happy.
You also didn't have to have at the time, because of people's cinema habits,
mm-hmm.
you didn't have to have the outrageous promotional budgets that they have now.
Yes.
So you didn't have to have all sorts of campaigns uh-huh. and you might have posters or adverts
yeah.
in the telly or in the papers, uh-huh. but you didn't have to have massive worldwide fucking promotional campaigns.
And the teaser for the trailer.
Because people just went to the pictures every week.
They did, yeah.
And it was a question of whether you went into the Odeon 1 or 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you were going to one of them.
It's interesting that his daughter didn't mention his sexuality, Vincent Price, because
yeah.
she has spoken about it and said that she was pretty certain he was bisexual.
Yeah, it was right. a bit fluid.
And he was a very prominent, outspoken supporter of gay rights.
Was he now?
Oh yeah, was he? Was really politically, he was a really mm-hmm. sound guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she mentioned that extraordinary thing where he got effectively not blacklisted by
yeah.
McCarthy, but greylisted, which means you weren't you know, indicted or anything, but you were, nobody would employ you.
Yeah.
Because prior to the outbreak of, or the joining of America into the Second World War, for many years, and it showed you a cartoon that, who was it did it again?
It was James Thurber was his friend.
Yeah, James Thurber, his friend, did a cartoon. And then it was Hitler, and this was from 1935, you know, as a sort of, you know, bad satirical thing. So he was actually quite a noisy, prominent anti-Nazi right the way through the most of the 30s. So therefore, as far as McCarthy was concerned, that meant he must have been a communist.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was grey-listed and didn't work for a couple of years. But, I think there's more to it than that, because...
Oh, you fucking would.
Oh, well, of course I would.
Come on, then.
Because I'm right about these things.
Why?
Although, I don't think Victoria Price means anything by it, but of course the perspective they have is American. So he's not in Hollywood films or on the Broadway stage.
Yeah.
But there was a long, a big period in the 50s and 60s where he did a lot of touring theatre in Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that would have been when he was grey-listed.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So he wasn't able to work in films that. It's like, fine. We'll
but
go
what
and
about
do
British
once,
films?
We'll go and do Once Nightly. And,
he made films in British and he made films in
But we'll go and do Once Nightly around, you know, Manchester and Rep and, you know, and the Theatre Royal in Glasgow and Edinburgh and Perth and Croydon and Birmingham. That's perfectly, perfectly fine. It's a good living.
His wee henchman looks a bit like Jeff Lynne from
Halo.
Halo, doesn't he? Oh, this is going into
this. There's a, I think that lets that down a wee bit.
What does?
The because it look when he comes out there, it's a particular thing that bothers me. Whenever they try to have blood or wine or things like that, when you splash it,
yes.
It just looks like water because it's not thick enough and it's not viscous enough.
I see, yes.
So, you know, so it's like, that'll be like Ribena.
Yeah.
Which means when it splashes, it just looks like water.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
So because it's not coating his face or anything like that as wine would.
Do you know what always annoys me in films when I see it? When folk
Willies.
Just once. When folk don't have proper glasses on. When it's clearly just plain glass.
They're very flat.
And you get a lot of reflection on
them. Yeah,
interesting.
Oh, there you go. That it wins or no?
So Robert Morley, Chris, fan thereof?
Robert Morley, yes.
Why would you not be a fan of Robert
Morley? Robert Morley, the second best presenter of Sunday Night at the London Palladium.
Who? Second best?
Yeah, after Norman Vaughan.
Okay.
Oh, I've got a good crossword clue for you both that was in the Scotsman yesterday.
Go on.
Here's a crossword clue. Seven letters.
I don't believe in crosswords.
Comic becomes goon.
Comic becomes goon.
Seven letters.
It's not about. Comic becomes goon.
Is it an anagram?
Yes.
Okay. They always are, aren't they?
Of.
So, what?
What's that anagram of?
Oh, Seacom.
Correct, Seacom.
Ah, boom! I got a crossword.
It actually works in two
I've
different ways.
I've never fucking done that.
It works because it gives you the anagram, and comic is the anagram indicator.
How's that an anagram?
Why is that?
Why is that an anagram indicator?
Anything that's sort of like, you know, sort of uncover, twisted, words that describe, that could be used as an adjective to describe an anagram, could often be an anagram indicator.
I think crossword clues would be better if it's an anagram one, and at the beginning of it says, start anagram now.
You're such
it would. It'd be a lot better, wouldn't it?
I've got no idea what he's talking about. What's that?
It just that's how crosswords would be better. Because it's just like, comic means it's an anagram. But what the fuck? That doesn't mean anything. How does comic mean? So it should just have, at the beginning of it, start anagram.
You're an arsehole. Let's watch the sequence.
An anagram.
Okay.
Look at this lovely...
Here's an anagram for you.
Wide-angle
comic becomes Milligan.
Look at that. That must be like a sort of 20mm or something that he's used. Look at it bending at the
side. It's almost... Yeah, it's almost fisheye.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Could be about even an 18, isn't it? It's so wide.
It is an incredible action sequence, this.
Oh, this is amazing.
There's a lot of quite low camera angles in this, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a big old...
The camera's always hiding something from you. Isn't it?
Yes.
Fencing, eh? that's a funny thing.
So yeah. had they, because I've been so absorbed by this chat, and absorbs the anagram indicator in that sentence, that yes. Have they revealed how Vincent Price didn't die yet?
No.
Have I missed that? Okay, that's good.
Fencing was used to be one of those things that would turn up in World of Sport, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Like water log, ski
yeah,
jumping.
Log rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember water ski jumping.
Water ski jumping?
Yeah, you know where they'd be water skiing and they'd have the big sort of things to jump
there's
over.
There's a lot of this when, you know, you talk about hospital broadcast disease. Oh, there was something about doing lots of sort of like sports streaming online and all that.
Mm-hmm.
People who have companies that do that, I don't know who these people are. They could be nice, but they might not.
They're not.
But whenever I hear it, I just think that's World of Sport.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the finish
sport nobody else
finish
wants.
For a reason.
Yeah. Although Dickie Davis was fucking great.
He was great. Is he a dead man?
No, he's still alive.
Not by the time this goes out.
So look how this is shot. Look at it.
Mm.
Now wait till you see what happens as it kicks off properly.
I tell you what, that is
amazing.
That's very nicely choreographed, isn't it?
It's beautiful. Because actually there's loads of things happening at once, which is, it's a good action sequence.
It is, isn't it?
It's funny. It's really thrilling.
Uh-huh.
But also, it tells you something about their characters while it's going on. Everything you need to know about them is in it.
What do you mean? How so?
Well, there's character development in there. This is where he makes
the action is character development.
I see. Okay. Oh, right, flashback.
Will you ever pay attention to anything we say?
Are you just pretending to be a cunt?
Who's this guy?
This all looks really minky-manky as well.
Yeah. Proper 1972, isn't it?
Poor fucking Vincent earning his bucks. They're lying in that shit. Mm.
Right, so this is a flashback. This is after he jumped off. Lands in the Thames and washes up here. Okay, I'm with you now. Right.
Well, it's a horrible thing.
That's
here.
Probably not Vincent, to be fair.
It's probably not.
But he gives him the drink.
Oh. So he's that's found by all the tramps.
Uh-huh. But that's a proper tramp's hat, that guy's
all
wearing.
All the tramps.
King of the tramps.
King of the tramps.
Thank you, that's plenty, thank you. Oh, you're killing me here, sir.
No, we've not had the cordon of the juice for a
while. No, there we go.
We want some of this.
That would be lovely, thank you. That would be...
You really are an asshole.
Efficacious. What's that?
For the tape, you got less than half an inch.
Yeah.
Not the first time.
Not like me.
Aha!
Look, batter top hat and everything.
Yeah.
Proper gentleman of the road.
Yes.
Oh,
here he is, look. Yeah, he's in a right old shitty state, isn't he?
Yeah, it's just a bad way.
Clutching that trophy.
One of the great men, Vincent Price.
Oh yeah, I think we've pretty much shown that.
Yeah.
She began the show by just playing his voiceover from the Thriller.
Did she?
No mere mortal can resist the evil love, Michael Jackson.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. When did he die then, Vincent Price?
He died in 1994.
He must have been some age then.
He was 83.
Was he?
He'd been quite ill for some time. He was a lifelong smoker, so there you go. Mm. Oh, Chris hasn't drinking it.
I can't watch it. It's disgusting.
But
you can smell the mess.
His last
or blue balls,
gift, as she put it, was that he had that little cameo in Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, it's a lovely scene in Edward Scissorhands.
He's created. It makes me cry.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, okay.
It's when he's explaining to him. Manners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When you do this is to avoid embarrassing situations. And then he holds up the hands that he's going to give him.
Yeah.
But then dies.
It's too much.
It's heartbreaking.
Mm.
Because, of course, he'd voiced Vincent, his film, 10 years before, which is the great little...
Which I saw in the pictures.
Film. Did you? I saw it years later.
I saw it. There was a period where... I don't know why. Must have been some sort of distribution deal. Where films suddenly had these little shorts ahead of them. And there was that one. There was another weird one with a sort of Kirk Douglas. It was like a Private Eye, but it was kind of robot-y, and he was like Kirk Douglas.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Do you remember that one? I don't really remember what happens in
that.
It. But it was just with a few films.
Mm.
But Vincent, the animated film, is great. The poor dog.
Aye.
There's a bit of interlacing going on there, a couple of shots.
And Frankie Weenie, which they made into a very good long film, isn't it?
This must have taken days.
Yeah, it's really complex.
Yeah. fiendish to edit as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine the amount of coverage you'd have.
This is
done.
The bit that's just extraordinary.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So they're now having a fight, a sword fight.
Trampoline.
Back toward the sport again, aren't we?
Dickie Davis trampoline to convince you this is a good thing.
Here we go to the Civic Hall in Runcorn.
Yes, that's it.
For trampoline fencing.
And topless darts in Roehampton.
How many actors have you destroyed?
Where's he from, Vincent Price? Where's
St. Louis, Missouri.
Yeah.
Really?
Which, as you pointed out, he was from a very rich family. His family must have known T.S. Eliot's family, because they were a very prominent family there at the time.
She mentioned that they had something to do with T.S. Eliot.
Sorry.
You know how last time we were talking about this?
Excuse me, I was talking.
I thought you'd finished.
No,
your big
it was at that point
a lovely
the
big
fourth
fuck.
Largest city in the United States.
Are you done now?
Yeah.
That's lovely. You know how last week...
Did you fucking know that? I told you.
No, I didn't.
It shows some humility.
That's fucking brilliant. Goodness.
You're the third largest complaint.
Yes. So I never really thought about Vincent Price having an accent that was from anywhere. You know how you were talking about that in relation to Cannonball?
I know what
time?
You mean.
Well, when I was...
I've never particularly
he was
said he's American.
I hadn't particularly thought
he wasn't.
It was
English.
When I got a bit older, I realised that he had a more American accent. Yeah. Well, I remembered through the week what words it was that Cannon and Ball used to say that made me think about it.
Okay.
And it was their.
That's right.
Because I think...
Yeah.
It was quite right. As if they're from, Bury or somewhere like that.
Yeah, Burnley.
And they say, and we'll go over there. Come on, Tommy, we've got to go there to go to work.
That's right.
And it was that I noticed eventually. Yeah. And I thought, for a while, why have they just started doing that? And I realised it was just I had just only noticed it.
Don't.
Don't be dirty.
If you listen don't be dirty. And Rolls Boyson. The Rolls Boysons.
Yeah, Rolls Boysons.
Remember that? That was another friend law in the Rolls Boysons.
Yeah,
Boysons.
Yes.
Rolls Centers of Excellence.
Yes, that's it. Yes. Yeah. And wasn't there standards of accountability?
That's right.
Careful now. Careful.
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 Nope.
It's Jeff Lindigan. It's interesting you say that about Vincent Price's voice, because actually if you listen to recordings of T.S. Eliot, he sounds very like him.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
Jack Hawkins. Now he might be lying free at this point, because you notice of all the characters, even when they were sitting in the Jeffrey Archer's flat, No, the rest of them have ties on and he doesn't.
Right.
He's the one that has the collar done up with something around his neck, and it's probably to cover he had the whole thing. And
Jeffrey,
this was the other thing I was going to point out about the where they live, because I think that's either Chain Walk or Birdcage Walk, because I think that's Chelsea Bridge next to it.
Right.
And you literally have to be a fucking billionaire to live there.
Yeah.
The idea that anybody who's anything to do with a newspaper would now...
Yeah. Oh, that's Diana Dawes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Diana Dawes.
She also turned up, of course, in Steptoe and Son.
Yeah.
Right again.
Yes, she's fucking wonderful.
And
she
on
really
the TV
was.
AMs.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
She got sacked for a product.
When she was sacked for, but also for the weight thing. Remember?
Yeah, that was that's it. Yeah.
And she was in the video for
Prince Charming.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And which actress was in the video for Beauty Two Shoes? The one that he runs away with at the end and dances with.
Don't know.
Irene Handel.
Caroline Munro.
Is it?
Oh, really?
Who plays? The late departed Mrs. Fives.
Oh, that's right. That was a really good find.
Right, okay.
So, Victoria Price told us that in the abominable Dr. Fives, people loved working with Vincent Price so much that she volunteered to take no credit on the abominable Dr. Fives because she was working on.
Yeah, she was on a hammer contract.
She was on a hammer contract.
Oh, so
she went and worked on it, but
okay.
she couldn't get credit.
Oh, could she get paid?
Yeah, she'd get paid,
but
she had no
credit.
Screen credit.
I see.
So,
okay.
Although she has a very prominent role, but she was only there 2 days. The role she has is most of the pictures and things. So, but it was sort of, she said that was evidence of how much people just liked watching
them. And she
just
hung about in a coffin with them for 2 days giggling. Literally, because that's the scene.
Why wouldn't you want to do that?
Oh,
right, okay.
He's playing a Scotswoman, he's doing this, by the way. He appears to be humping Diana Doris.
Yeah, so this is to make Jack Hawkins jealous.
Yeah.
I see, okay.
I reckon Vincent probably slipped to 1 million. Is that it?
I mean, the pictures of him when he was like in his 20s and all that, and he was fucking gorgeous.
He was a good looking man, wasn't he? Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
And she kept saying, wasn't he handsome?
Oh, he really was.
Bless.
Saltery is a great name, isn't it? So this is, of course, an Othello.
Yeah, so he throttles him. Yeah. So he doesn't get murdered, he just goes to choke him.
Yeah.
Right.
Literally, in his case.
Mm. Oh, I see, he's killing
her. Jack Hawkins, didn't he? Yeah. He had a big old head. Uh-huh.
He does have a big head.
Jack Hawkins, whose influence and stardom is almost completely forgotten now. Mm. Jack Hawkins was right up until probably Sean Connery hit his pomp in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. The only British film star who ever had any real power in Hollywood.
Yeah. Mm.
There were a lot of films and things got made because Jack Hawkins. Like Zulu. Zulu
what
got made.
David Niven?
Zulu. Well, David Niven was never really a producer or anything.
Yeah, Jack Hawkins plays the mad...
He's the mad priest.
Priest, doesn't he? Yeah.
But Zulu only got made because of Jack Hawkins. Because right. Because he backed it and spoke to studios, whatever. He had a huge amount of influence because he was the biggest, you know, British film star in America.
Uh-huh.
So he had a lot of pull. Uh-huh. But it's all gone now. It's all gone.
Of course. I'll tell you who never gets enough credit as a producer is the actor Michael Medwin, who produced many, many films, including lots of Lindsay Anderson's films.
Who's that fucker?
Never Michael heard. Medwin, you'd recognise him.
Fucker.
He plays the producer, or he plays the publisher in Colin Sandwich and whatnot.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Always have to talk about Colin Sandwich.
I love Colin Sandwich.
Yeah,
it's good. And all talking like that all the time.
Yeah.
No, it's a good program.
Mm. Mm. Phenomenal.
But it has the same effect on me as Clockwise, that a lot of it is based upon his anxiety and putting stuff up, and it therefore makes me quite anxious because I was a bit anxious.
Yes.
Like when he can't decide what he's having in the French restaurant and he actually ruins the entire holiday because of it.
Yes.
Arids.
Old fashioned arids.
Yeah,
it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. If all the filthy foreigners got their hands on it.
Yes.
It's funny, you know, because I mean, Harrods is a tourist attraction now.
Mm.
We went to a couple of times when I was a kid. Just because we were down and visit people in London. And it was just like a big department store.
I was about to say, I went once and I thought, Big Fraser's.
But, you know, I mean, now you go down and the ground floor is all like tourists buying wee bars of chocolate with Harrods on it and all that. But
Kiffling again.
30 years ago, it was just a shop. It was a shop, a proper shop.
Yeah, because I've never been once and that was about 1991.
Mm. Yeah. Probably just on the cusp.
Yeah.
So when did you first see this film, Craig? Do you remember?
I think I saw it on BBC, BBC One, in my teen years, one late one night.
Yeah, that's when I saw it.
Yeah.
I actually
because these films used to be on all the time.
It did, yeah.
I bought a lovely copy of it there somewhere. There was a release of a number of films of a sort in the mid-90s.
It's Bob Ross.
And it was look at the copper's face. It was but this lovely version of it. So it was a VHS of Theatre of Blood, but it was in a white box that you opened rather than the usual clamshell.
Yeah.
You opened up, and it had little cards of scenes of it, scenes from it. That you could
upstairs.
I hate to advertise the competition, but the Blu-ray of this, which I have at home, has a commentary on it by The League of Gentlemen, which is very good.
Oh, really?
Not as good as ours, but it's good.
No.
They don't talk about shops at any point.
Do they not?
No. I'll tell you one thing that's quite nice about Vincent Price, in that his marriage to the woman who was Victoria's mother was coming to an end at this point.
Oh, yeah, you're going to say the same thing that I liked as well.
Well, they stayed friends and remained close and used to go to things for their children together.
Oh. It's just that the wife, it's just that she couldn't deal with the sort of fame.
She hated, sort of very similar to Meryl Guinness was the same. Mm. She hated having to be on show and be part of that world. She was a very quiet person. That was actually one of about 3 points in that when I had a wee tear in my eye. Mm. And I'd say, But another thing I like about Price also is that he fell in love with Coral Brown, as we know, a difficult lady. But she was no sort of like 30 years younger. She was 2 years younger than him. She died before him. She was, you know, a substantial woman and a substantial actress in her own right. She was a big, big star and a big theatrical star. She, of course, is...
I don't suppose you have any objection to me buying that. It's for the Archbishop of Canterbury's mother.
She, of course, that's an Englishman abroad. She played herself in the TV film of it because the story about her meeting Guy Burgess
in
Moscow was about her.
Was it?
Yeah.
Which she only told to Alan Benham.
That's right.
And years later. And probably then, just as our let me carry this
down. Yeah, he wrote the play about it.
Wow. But there's a lovely line.
And then sort of talked her into playing herself.
There's a lovely line in one of the books of Alec Guinness's diaries. It's up there somewhere. I can't remember what
they're
it's
very,
called.
Very, very good.
It's quite a slim volume, that one.
Yeah.
My name escapes me. Where he meant, he makes a nice reference. If I'm walking away from it, it's because I'm going to see if I can find it.
Well, you are walking away. There's no F about it.
Yeah. But I mean, said if it sounds as me walking away.
So she's being, at this point, Victoria Price said, in some ways, there were times when I wish that he'd gone through and actually did that to her. She's being electrocuted.
It sounds like the Price family had quite a good attitude towards fame.
Yeah, they did, by the sounds of it, yeah.
Your man, Vincent.
No, you came away from it thinking there was nothing about him that wasn't admirable. Uh-huh. You know, he was, by all accounts, a very decent man.
Mm. How you getting on there? You got
this I think this is quite a nice... It's just a glancing reference, but I think it tells you quite a lot about them and why I think they must have been quite good fun. So this is, we're talking about Monday the 20th. Hello there. And you talk...
Sorry.
Hello there. Are they good?
That's quite good.
And he's been invited to take part in a sailing of the QE2 from New York to Southampton. As a sort of celebrity guest. The real pleasure of a transatlantic crossing on a big liner. Actually, can I do a joke that actually made me laugh out loud? A wee thing I found over Eric Sykes the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a documentary where he's talking about his book. And he says, it's a very good book that I've just written. Can I just read a bit?
Very good. There we go.
Anyway, the real pleasure of a transatlantic crossing on a big liner is tramping round and round the promenade deck, kidding yourself you are being healthy. M. Merla would be unable to do that now, she gets seasick anyway. And I wouldn't enjoy being closeted in seminars on significant film. We appreciate the offer, but shall drop her anchor in Lake Como in May. Vincent and Coral Price would have leapt at the opportunity and enjoyed every minute. I think their greatest pleasure in life was to be at sea on a luxurious freebie.
Oh, quite right,
So I think that's quite actually a nice little window in time. Because you can imagine going, oh yes, we'll definitely come along.
How many weeks? Wonderful. Because he was, of course, had this other sort of life as a great art expert. He was a buyer for some of the big US stores buying art and whatnot. So
big Vince?
Yeah.
It was for Sears Roebuck.
Sears Roebuck.
Wow.
He spent $3 million, $2 million in 3 years buying 55,000 pieces of art. Because they went into the Sears catalogue.
Uh-huh.
The idea being that, you know, Sears had a very... Sears, of course, have gone now.
Yeah.
They had a very sort of egalitarian approach to these things. Where if you are a housewife, a normal person, working people, middle class people, working class people, you have a right to access to these things the same as anybody else. So you go to the Sears catalogue and you can buy clothes, you can buy a washing machine, or you can buy a piece of art, original art. Because it's just another item to grace your home.
Wow.
And you presumably paid it over 20 weeks.
So you should see this.
I love that. See that look?
So he's...
This is terrible.
It is terrible, but it is the best one
of
the film.
No, but it's actually the makes me gag a bit, where he just eats Robert Morley.
So, do you know the play Titus Andronicus?
Not particularly.
And how Titus gets his revenge upon his villains?
When I was younger, I thought it was called Titus.
Okay.
But there we are.
He bakes his... Where's he off to now?
I don't know.
He bakes his enemy's children, two sons, into a pie.
Right. Wow, okay.
Chris, are you doing your washing up now?
I think he is. I think he's left the building. Or he's back.
It's actually subtly more than that.
No, that's what happens in the play, I said.
I know, but the reference is deeper than that.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Let me explain.
I was going to let it come out.
No, I don't mean that. What I mean is, it's the queen whose children are baked into a pie. Because he's a big puff.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I see.
And he's Hillman Hunter there.
Lovely. Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
yeah,
nice. Yeah.
Well, a friend who works at the hospital had one of them. John. Hey, John.
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 The Hillman.
Used to cut about John. His dungarees.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Hillman. I did it. Hey, John. Up. You see the car park at the hospital.
Hmm.
The blue one.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's John's, yeah. Beautiful, beautiful motor.
Mm.
So this is like one of your favourite programmes coming up, Jack. It's a sort of...
What?
It's basically a parody of a sort of cookery programme.
Oh, yeah.
And if, for instance, you had quite a camp Frenchman taking part in a cookery programme now, and he wanted to say something about how much he liked something...
I don't think he could do that, because it would sound... Out of context, it sounds a bit racist. So.
You shit.
You're such a wank.
How did Patrick Troughton die again?
Yeah, how did Patrick Troughton die? It's one or the other.
I don't know, but Alec. My penis likes it. And so do my boobies.
Who is that meant to be again? Tell us.
So, on a series called My Kitchen Rules in Australia. Uh-huh. In fact, there's My Kitchen Rules.
Which you have a puzzling love of.
No, it's MasterChef Australia. Judges
are French.
It's the best one. But in My Kitchen Rules, Australia, one of the judges called Manu. He's a French man, but he's a very, very French Frenchman.
And he's always
criticising the contestants for not putting enough gravy on the plate. Where is the sauce?
Well, there's plenty coming up here.
Okay. The other thing about this is, in the world of Theatre of Blood, the universe, the Theatre of Blood, the extended universe.
Sorry?
The extended universe, yeah.
It must be a programme.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it must be a real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because he's not surprised.
Because he says, oh, I've always wanted to be on.
Yeah, which makes you wonder how...
Hang on, so they're doing... Most of it then. What's going on here? This is... Yeah. What is it? This is your...
This is your dish.
Oh, I see. Okay.
This
what
is your dish.
Word. Bara.
That's one of the best themes, isn't it? This is your life.
Ba-da-boom,
ba-da-boom. So good, isn't it?
It's like a nightmare on the town, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's everything.
It's ba-da-boom. Come on, my program, and it's ring-a-ding-ding for you bozos.
Yes, that's it.
There we go. So you see what's happening? He's got a big.
Oh.
What's he been looking for when he came in the house? What was he calling on?
This gives me the white bulk.
I was too busy looking at you, so I didn't see.
Yeah. You are really fantastically annoying, aren't you?
Mm. Was he drinking meth?
The same housing estate that Robert Stevens gets killed in at the end of the ass fix. The ass fix. Bow, bow, bow. I'm gonna mend your end.
Well, it looks like White City. It looks like the back of White City.
Ah, that is exactly like John's on that.
John
Gallagher.
That is a bit racist.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Look.
Whoop.
Actually, it looks like that quite nice pie that they make in the...
What are you having at all?
In the hospital.
Oh, it's just him eating it. Woof. I mean, that's probably what I look like eating it. Yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah, nice that pie. Mm. That's the best thing.
The only thing.
Not as
that's the best thing they make in the hospital canteen.
Not as disgusting as Daniel Craig eating it.
No, that'd be awful. Or... Sean Connery in Humphrey in October.
No, you're talking.
Wet eating.
Yeah. Concise nose.
Apparently he saw off the hurricane in Bahamas. God, fuck off. I'm not leaving my fucking house. God, fuck you.
Oh, it's a hurricane, eh?
I used to have snow in Fountain Bridge. Fuck yeah.
Where are my doggies?
Yeah.
Robert
Morley is somebody who's also sort of sadly forgotten now.
Yeah, that's true.
For somebody
who
was very pervasive.
Mm-hmm. He was, yeah. Yeah.
I was discussing this
author,
kind of thing,
writer, presenter, comedian.
In terms of authors recently on the Facebook, this is Dead Dugsley, mm-hmm. on the Facebooks, because it happens to authors as well, and I was talking about Graham Greene, mm. Anthony Burgess and Kingsley Amis, all of whom died within about 5 years of each other. Mm. Uh-huh. And when I was sort of reaching my late teens and whatnot, before mm-hmm. became popular, were huge
they were,
names,
yeah.
and big authors.
Right. I think Kingsley Amis has probably persisted a bit more.
If you go into a bookshop, you don't find
them. No, but I think just in terms of
his son as well.
Yeah, but I think in just terms of, because you still get, I mean, I'm not saying anything whoa. Like it used to be, but you still, but you still do get people who talk about, you know, like the influence of Kingsley Amis.
Yeah, I suppose so. And
but Graham Greene,
yeah,
is done,
and Anthony Burgess as well. I mean, they'll come back, I guess.
They will come back.
Wasn't Graham? Didn't someone pretend to be Graham Greene? Isn't that right? Isn't that some story about
Huey?
No, not Huey.
Lorne.
No, I'm sure that's the case. Someone masquerading as him.
Yeah, he turned up at church one day and went. No, you're thinking.
Oh, look! Oh, he's shoving it all his gob now.
That's not the first time that scene's been done. No, you're thinking of the weird episode where he always refused to do on-camera interviews.
Right.
And then there was footage of somebody, it was meant to be Graham Greene. And it was sort of, you could see it.
That's not me.
No, it was really weird, because so there's a shot of somebody walking, then there's like a shadow of them and whatever.
Right.
And that was meant to be Graham Greene. And then there was this whole thing, it wasn't Graham Greene, or was it? It was a bit of an enigma, if I could be politically
correct. Read many of his books?
Graham Greene.
Yeah, good.
I have actually.
Man in Havana,
The
Human
Scripture would be my favourite one. I think it's a very good book.
I'm not avid. But because I don't read a lot of fiction, but I read them a long time ago, and I enjoyed them.
The Ministry of Fear. That's a good book.
Is it?
He refers to that as one of his entertainments.
Hmm. But I like another person who's sort of disappeared is J.B. Priestley.
Yeah.
Who's completely receded
into
the
background. An authentically great man and a great... Mm-hmm. I suppose he's kept alive through the...
through an Inspector Calls,
yeah,
I
but his range of writing was much, much wider and probably more interesting, but he was a very political guy as well.
But there are so many writers who have just vanished like that. Or playwrights as well, people like James Bridie, who was a huge writer. Completely vanished.
He was a guy that wrote Paths, Tunes of Glory.
Yeah. Galsworthy.
Yeah.
Has pretty much disappeared. I mean, his last hurrah was probably the first that he sang on the telly.
And in Scotland, people like Eric Linklater, who was a huge writer in his day. Compton Mackenzie.
Yeah, Compton Mackenzie.
Popular writers.
Who was a seriously influential person. Completely receded into darkness.
Yeah.
Just sort of, they'll all come back. But
I hope so.
Or will we? Troglodytes that make up you cunts listening to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cheers!
Fucking
although if you're listening to this, you're already a cut above.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly,
that's true.
Yeah.
Still a cut above us.
Yeah, that's probably true as well.
Isn't Diana Rigg just beautiful in this film?
Yeah. When did Diana Rigg get
one of
old?
Is it one of our favourite parts as well, this?
Yes.
She does speak really highly of it as a film,
Well, she was...
She never had a huge film career.
No. And then she disappeared.
Stage and
I seem to remember she
telly.
Seemed to disappear for a long time. And then she was back.
Yeah,
it was in Mother Love, wasn't it? You remember that?
She did a lot of stage stuff.
Right.
Which is why she became Dame Diana. Right? Uh-huh. But she suddenly became old.
Yeah.
Because she was like this.
Yeah.
And then she fucked off to
now.
The National Theatre or the RSC or something.
Yeah.
And then she came back like 15 years later as an old woman.
Yeah.
I'll tell you who's... What's her name? Is it Jennifer L? Remember her?
Jennifer Ely.
Yeah, that's her. That's the the badger. She's disappeared, isn't she?
Jennifer Ely is the daughter of Rosemary Harris.
Wow.
Who's in the Powerman's Lunch, and she's Aunt Thingy in the Sam Raimi's Spider-Man film. She's an English-American actress.
Uh-huh.
And she's Jennifer Ely's mother.
Wasn't she in things like Jennifer Ely? Wasn't she like
Camille
Law
and stuff like that? Uh-huh. Yeah.
God,
and then she seemed to just disappear.
Yeah, she did. I think she went to America.
Did she?
She turned up in... Was it Contagion, the Steven Soderbergh film about the illness going around the world?
Oh,
she turned up in that as a scientist in it.
I remember the Chamomile Lawn being a criticised by a lot of people, not in the press, but people that you hear talking, because it was one of the first things Paul Eddington did after Yes, Prime Minister, and everybody thought it was going to be a comedy.
May I fuck like, you? May I fuck you now? That was a line to come up, wasn't it? May I fuck you now?
Yeah.
I know that people spoke very highly of Mary Wesley and said she was actually a very, very good novelist. Mm.
That line's there.
Literary adaptations, that doesn't happen much, eh?
Nobody makes them for the telly, man.
No, they don't. But you know what I mean? They'll make, like, things of, like, fucking, classics. You know, classics. But not contemporary writers.
I suppose Wolf Hall was one. But you don't get a lot, eh?
Wolf Hall.
I mean, could anyone be bothered reading a fucking Ian McEwan novel, for instance? I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, that. Well, that's actually, that's quite a good
that's
argument
against
it, isn't
against
it?
Yeah. Because they made a film of Chesil Beach, didn't they? And I read that book, and it's the most preposterous book I've ever fucking read.
As reasons, these are the reasons I don't read fiction.
Well,
likewise.
I read a lot of fiction. Well, not as much as I used to.
And I'm not pretending that it's a sensible course, but...
No.
You know, it's like going to see, like... I find it's too much like going to see stand-ups who aren't famous. A lot of the time, most of the time, it's just embarrassing or frustrating.
I do think the sort of English literary novel
this
is rather overrated. And
who
also,
did the cartoons?
Don't know, they're a wee bit sort of...
No, but I mean, in the context of the film,
yeah.
Who sat
okay.
down and made
yeah.
them?
They're a bit Gerald Scarfe or Ralph Steadman,
aren't
they? The certainly, I don't like sort of read the books pages and think, "Oh, that's the hot new novel. I must read that."
No.
Not really. No.
Okay.
I tend to.
Occasionally, something will come out.
I think there might be something out
there. There might be something in the offing.
Yeah.
The last one I read that was kind of reviewed a lot and I bought the novel off was The North Sea, which came out a couple of years. No, The North Water, I think it was called, which is a sort of thing about going on the whaling ships up north, and it's kind of getting adapted. It's fantastically brutal and violent. And
Ian Henry's getting stuck with...
Sorry.
...in the ice reeling.
I'm wondering what about fucking...
No, we're all... No, it's not your sons.
So
this is the last one. This
is this
Ian
at the
Jackson? Yeah, so this
is
Ian...
Life at the Jackson.
What?
No, that's Edward II, you think.
No, he's getting blinded.
Costa gets blinded in King Lear.
Oh, I see.
By Edmund, I think, isn't it? His son.
Actually... That's another thing you don't get now.
Blinding by suns.
No, that probably happens quite a lot. That probably happens quite a lot.
Could that happen to you, mate? That could very well happen to you.
Close to the fucking wind.
It's not going to happen to him.
No,
it's going to happen to me.
I'm thinking of...
What's nasty, that look?
I'm thinking of big set piece Shakespeare productions on the telly.
No, that doesn't happen. Well, no.
Russell T Davies did it.
No, I mean ones that matter.
Uh-huh.
They did the sort of the Crown thing.
Yeah, no, I mean... But they were all abridged. And I mean ones that actually matter.
Right.
So, like, remember what...
You just missed the big...
The big reveal.
Jeff Lynne is...
Is Dan Erick.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Were we not meant to know that? I thought...
No, you remember when, like, Gail Good did King Lear, and it was like, wow!
Yeah.
And everybody saw it.
Yeah.
I watched some of that thing, The Crown series.
Hollow Crown
or whatever. Yeah, Hollow Crown. I'm a dad. Something like that. No, I watched the one that was the Henry the Vivi part one or some whatever, you know, with Hiddleston and Julie Walters as the innkeeper, Quickly. Mrs. Quickly. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I didn't think it was very good.
Who played Falstaff? Was it you?
You know, it might have been Simon Russell Beale. Because I remember them being quite good.
I think that might be true. I've seen Simon Russell Beale play Hamlet on stage. That was good. That was probably the best bit of acting I've seen.
But the problem with Henry the Ivy part I...
Louis the Sheep.
There's no problem. It's a great play.
I wasn't going to say there was a problem with the play. What I was going to say in terms of problems with productions of it is that once you have seen Chimes at Midnight, it doesn't actually matter what else you see.
Yeah, that's true.
Because not only is it an astonishing adaptation of Shakespeare, it is one of the finest films ever made.
Yeah,
in fact, it is so fantastic, it actually makes me cry in some shots. There's a shot in Mistress Quickly's with the camera, Falstaff.
Yeah, what's her name?
Margaret Rutherford.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah.
Where there's a shot. Because he did the Killing of Queen, dressed the whole set against walls and the ceiling, where Orson Welles' Falstaff comes battering out to go at somebody, and he moves stage, camera left to right, and the camera pans quickly across within the benches as he strides in the background with Quickly in the right, and it is so stunning. it actually makes me just sit and watch it over and over again. And it is a phenomenal. And anybody who hasn't seen it should see it.
And what do you think of his Othello?
Holy mackerel! Yeah, I'm not.
Not quite as bad as Lawrence Olivier's. Though.
Especially.
Oh, hello!
Especially with, like, you fucking Michael McLemore. Hello there! Yeah. I'm black, you know. look at me, black knackers.
Three Times at Midnight is fabulous.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
I saw Henry the Fourth Parts 1 and 2 on stage once in a day at the Festival Theatre in Edinburgh.
Was it a bit?
No, it was good. It was Timothy West played Falstaff.
All right.
Sam West played Hal, and I can't remember who he played, one of the other dukes or princes in it, was Gary Walton, the father, the dad in
Brushstrokes, and then the Vicar of Dibley.
Na 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 na.
And then the Vicar of Dibley.
Yes, yeah. Do 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 do, Jack,
because of you, these things I do, because of you. Because of you.
There's another one that sounds like one of those guys that those people who, when they speak, they sound like they're going backwards.
That's because he's on the waltz.
Oh! It's got fucked in the heat.
Yeah, she did.
So Diana Rigg, wasn't
that's
it?
Quite odd.
Catherine
Tate just partnered her. Yeah, she did, yeah. So is Ian Hendry like the. Was he the
Diana head? Rigg, who's her son in law?
Who's her son in law?
Who is Diana Rigg's son in law?
Oh, hang on. Because I know who her daughter is. So who's she married to?
Ollie Rigg.
Huh? Should I give you a clue?
Mm-hmm.
What made me behave that way?
Oh, really? Guy Garvin. You.
You,
Williams.
My lookalike. Yeah, my niece and nephew for the tape referred to me as Uncle Greg from Elbow. Yeah. Yeah, Guy Garvey is her son-in-law. Wow. He's married to Rachel Sterling, her daughter.
Rachel Sterling looks a lot like her.
She does. She's a good actor as well.
She
She's
is
really,
very
really
good.
Great.
Yeah,
she's great in The Detectorist.
Guy Garvey's
not a bad actor.
He's
very
in The Detectorist, isn't he?
No, he's in Carpool thing, whatever it's called, Car Share.
That's right.
And he's really good.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he's the
very
main
natural.
Guy. Yes.
This was filmed in the Putney Hippodrome Theatre.
Right.
Which had been derelict for decades when they filmed it,
uh-huh.
and was knocked down for executive flats.
Wow!
Just a few years later, and it's a shame because it's clearly very beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's
the
stunning.
The Putney Hippodrome, Chris. Know any history of that?
Not especially. There were a whole slew of theatres at the time.
Yeah,
it's
a bonny one though.
Yeah, as indeed was the old Hammersmith.
Whoa! Pally. Here we go.
Yeah.
Which the Hackney Empire as well, but the Hammersmith probably people make a big fuss of, but it's actually not where it used to be. It used to be further back.
Yeah. What's your favourite little theatre to go into? I like the Lyceum in Edinburgh. It's a nice theatre. It's a nice size. It's got a nice kind of feel to it.
I can't
envisage the Lyceum.
I don't know. I mean, I used to like. I like the King's in Glasgow because I think it's got a nice. It's a bit crappy on the way in, I think.
Yeah.
But it's got a nice atmosphere inside it somehow, which I don't think either the Theatre Royal or the Festival Theatre have.
No,
I just find the Festival Theatre a bit soulless.
Yeah. I like the sets, the actual theatre.
Well,
the sets is nice.
I was going to say that the sets is a funny place, though, because if you're in the stalls, I think it's nice. And then you're in the Grand Circle where you have a better view. It's too cut off from the rest of the theatre.
I've never been up that high.
Because if you sit in the Grand... I mean, the first circle, the Dress Circle, the Grand Circle, you know, the first circle. If you sit in the first balcony, just because of the rake of the circle, which is very low, you can barely see the stalls, which means you don't feel that there's very much... happening elsewhere you're sitting.
Yeah.
Whereas in the King's and in and actually even in the Pavilion.
It's quite a lovely ending this, isn't it, when he lands there.
There's a much steeper rate, which means you can feel that you're still part of the crowd when you're in the higher circle. Not the upper circle, I have to say, which is fucking terrifying.
Is it? Yeah.
Where the King's.
In the King's, which is so steep.
Actually, it is.
It's fucking unnerving.
Yeah.
So this is about it.
So he pretty much done.
He didn't know how to make an exit, he says at the end.
Yes, and he
and walks off.
He sort of doesn't get it and gives in a huff. Madeline Smith still cutting about the back of
your head.
And you know, what happens here?
Matters, what a beautiful film.
Unlike, for example, It Chapter 2, which we saw recently and had divergent opinions on, except for the end, which I agree with. Because the story's finished, so now you finish.
Just finish! That,
And they don't do that in it.
You don't have to have a 25-minute fucking farewell to the cast. Coda. Just finish.
Right, I see. So you didn't like it, Bob?
No, I thought it was terrible. I hated It Chapter 2.
Chris Diamond.
No, I liked it. I enjoyed it, but... It finished. I mean,
choreographer of meth drinkers.
Wow.
And I mean, it finished. When I say it finished 20 minutes too late, that's a fucking conservative estimate. It may well have been half an hour.
Wow.
To the extent that people kept getting up in the cinema as if, like, you know, like when there's a concert and nobody's, the orchestra haven't quit, you know, they kept getting up and going, there's another bit.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. But the film itself, I enjoyed. I thought it was fun.
There's not a bad actor in Theatre of Blood, is there?
No, everybody's great.
Excellent.
Unlike
cast.
It, Chapter 2, who has, I would say, two honking performances.
From whom?
James McAvoy, I thought was terrible in it.
What accent is he doing in it?
He's doing his funny little funny
one.
He doesn't Split. He's very good in Split and he's very good in Glass.
It's very toothy, isn't it?
Very toothy. And there's an actor in it who Chris might... I know there's a little bit of Mitchell Damar from me. There's a character, Ben, who's the fat kid too, when he grows up. Now, I read the book back in the 80s and I remember sort of picturing Ben as he's grown up as being a kind of rangy Sam Shepard. He's supposed to be sort of lean and was, you know... Well, people sort of dress like adults then. The guy who plays him in the film is fucking ludicrous. I mean, he's incredibly beautiful. He looks like Fabio or someone like that in his 80s.
No, he looks better than that.
He's a great, great, great looking guy. There's no
he used to be in Neighbours.
Did they?
Did
they?
Yeah.
But, but he's actually so good looking. It's just fucking silly. I literally started laughing every time.
The problem, and I said to you though, that I felt it actually brings you out of it a bit. But the reason it brings you out of it a bit is because he's patently too young.
Yeah, he's about 15.
I have no problem with him being fucking gorgeous. Right. No, he was in Neighbours for about 7 years. Oh. It was characters called Sam something.
Okay.
Oh yeah, another one that I thought was bad was the actor who played Eric. I thought he was over the top. He was like from a...
Which one was that?
The one who's the sort of hypochondriac.
Oh, right.
I thought he was played at a bit sort of Three Stooges.
Why? What, all three of them?
He did play Carrie with Curly, Larry and Mulvey.
I didn't, but you know, that's going to see films.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Anyway, that's Theatre of Blood.
It was, yeah.
Let's talk about that much.
That was a splendid film.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film.
We'll be back with more.
We'll be back with more.
Mm. Is that an anagram?
We should get some. We should. Should
fuck off.
We did.
Stop.
I just
in the past, remember we asked people for suggestions of things to work on, and we never did any of them. But
no, we did. We did. Didn't we?
We did do some. Yeah.
We're
still meant to do Lighty Lads, aren't we?
Somebody asked us to do. Who was it asked us to do? Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Oh, that
I'd like,
Jonathan,
I'd like to fucking know.
Yeah, it was whoever it was. They watched
quite
it every
funny.
Year on their birthday.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
because it was rubbish. Is the answer?
Oh, stinks.
Because I'm going straight for the second row.
Why is it say theatre on menu design and content 2002?
Lovely.
Anyway, that's finished.
Yep.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
You prick.